Blog Talk Radio.
On the early morning of September the 11th, 2001, the news began early in New York City, as the late news there for September the 10th had been delayed past midnight due to the broadcast of Monday Night Football.
This is the news leader, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
Tonight, concern and outrage from parents about a party where a stripper performed for high school football players. Plus, we're live in Denver for a wrap-up of tonight's showdown between the Giants and the Broncos. Good evening, everyone. I'm Diana Williams.
And I'm Bill Ritter. Thanks for staying up. Those stories in a moment. But first, some big basketball news tonight. Very big basketball news. The best basketball player ever tonight, all but confirming he's coming back. Michael Jordan telling a group of reporters in Chicago he will play again, quote, for the love of the game.
Our other big story tonight, Westchester parents packed a high school meeting this evening, voicing shock and outrage about a private party for high school football players. Police say the athletes did drugs, drank booze, and were entertained by a stripper at a house in Chappaqua. Jim Dolan has more.
It was a packed meeting, but there was no yelling or fist pounding, just a room full of parents who were shocked and worried and wondering what to do next. And Principal Kathy Mason did not sugarcoat it, saying last week's incident was maybe most disturbing because the kids don't even seem to know what they did wrong.
Our kids were saying, this is no big deal.
But the county prosecutor thought otherwise. According to Janine Pirro, a group of students threw a party at this house in Chappaqua and hired this stripper to entertain. She did, according to the prosecutor, with the full knowledge of one of the boys' parents. But if kids weren't outraged, parents here say they were. The Board of Education will meet tomorrow and take three steps, including direct education of the students, community service by the students, and a written apology from each of the students involved in the party. And the school has work to do, too.
We've got to instill in them not a morals curriculum, a basic moral compass is the word I used, about what is decent and what is not.
In Chappaqua, Jim Dolan, ABC 7, Eyewitness News.
You saw it here. Tonight kicked off another season of Monday Night Football. The Super Bowl, New York Giants, who didn't look so super tonight, took on the Denver Broncos.
Scott Clark sort of predicted it with his predictable earlier tonight. It was not pretty. Scott's in Denver for us.
You're pretty close, but I'll tell you what, folks. It was pretty entertaining, though, to kick off Monday Night Football, I thought. But the Giants did fall short in their season opener here at Invesco Field.
But we got to do weather. Sam's here. We figured we'd put him to work.
Might as well. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on the Monday morning show.
And most of you sitting through the city with an inch and a quarter of rain. Inch and a quarter. That was the rainfall total for the park. Walk over the wall. We'll show you what it looks like. This shot showing you lower Manhattan. And everything is actually in pretty good shape now as we work into clear. But for us, bright sunny skies, 65 degrees at 7 o'clock in the morning, and sunny and pleasant for the rest of the day, 80 degrees. It's kind of a guilty pleasure, as beautiful as this weather is going to be.
That's the news for now. Thanks so much for watching. Have a good morning, everyone. I'm Diana Williams.
And I'm Bill Ritter. Nightline is up next, and Eyewitness News returns in just a few hours at 5 a.m. with live election coverage from the polls. For all of us here, Sam, Scott, and Denver, the entire team, have a great morning. See you tomorrow.
For today.
It was a typical early fall day in the United States of America, but later that morning...
American 11, are you trying to call?
The cockpit is not answering their phone.
Our number one has been stabbed, and our five has been stabbed.
Hey, I'm going to call from Washington. I have a situation with American 11, a possible hijack.
What's going on, Betty? The aircraft is erratic again. Problem, very erratic. Betty, talk to me. Betty, are you there? Betty?
A plane just hit
the World Trade Center. What? 737?
Did
what?
Like the World Trade
Center.
Who are you talking to?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
United 175, New York. We have some problems over here right now. We might have a hijack over here, two of them.
Jules, this is Ryan. Listen, on an airplane that's been hijacked. If things don't go well, it's not looking good. I just want you to know I absolutely love you. I want you to do good. So happy to find. Same to my parents and everybody. And I just totally love you. And I will see you in Denver. Bye, babe.
What are those people going to do? All
the elevators are blocked out.
Oh my God! So both towers are now.
Okay, now I got an aircraft southeast of the White House.
Crystal City, just north of Crystal City.
Just to the north of your town.
Yeah, stop all departures.
Pentagon just got hit. Delta CNN. God damn, I can't even protect my NCA.
United 93, that traffic for you is 1 o'clock, 12 miles eastbound, 370.
Negative contact, we're looking, United 93.
United 93, Cleveland, if you hear the center right then.
I got that piece of dog. Keep remaining sitting. You have a ball of balls.
Tuesday, 9:47 a.m.
Hi, baby. Baby, you have to listen to me carefully. I'm on a plane that's been hijacked. I'm on the plane. I'm calling from the plane. Want to tell you I love you. Please tell my children that I love them very much. And I'm so sorry, babe. I hope to be able to see your face again, baby. I love you. Bye.
Number 56865. We have, I believe it is a Boeing 757. Can you see him up there, sir?
That's concerned. It looks like he's rocking his wings.
Roger.
He's rocking back and forth.
Number 56865, I advise you stay away from that aircraft. Go north as fast as you can.
United 93, have you got information on that yet?
Yeah, he's down.
He's down?
Yes.
When did he land?
He did not land.
Oh, he's down?
Yes,
down?
Somewhere up northeast of Camp David.
John, it's me. I just wanted to let you know I love you, and I'm stuck in this building in New York. There's lots of smoke, and
we
just wanted you to know that I love you always.
At number 2 World Trade Center, right. Maybe your shoes are in the walking. We're not ready to die, but it's getting bad.
I'm gonna die,
ma'am. Say your prayers. We're gonna think positive because you gotta help each other get off the floor.
I'm gonna die.
A new type of war. That's what it is.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard how we, a lot of listeners around the world, was followed this absolutely awful, you know, absolutely a horrific event. Myself, Dave, and millions of our listeners will never forget what that day meant, how it changed the world as well. And I've got to thank Dave for that clip, which I haven't heard of that clip before, and the way that you presented it as well, Dave, it's really appreciated, and a lot of work went into that as well. So thank you so much, Dave, for the great clip there. Also, it just takes you back, it takes your breath away, doesn't it, to think of the devastation that was caused on that fateful day. Almost, I think it was 19 years ago, if I'm correct, David, if I'm wrong, please call me on it, mate. And I think it's 19 years. Do you know, I think most of us look back and it's just, you just close your eyes, you can see the events in your eyes. You never forget something as horrific as what we all saw, what unfolded on that very fateful day. But I say once again, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the English Defence League Radio. Shall I say, we always do something a bit special on this day. We won't forget the lives that was lost, the innocent people that were going about their business, and the same in the firemen and everybody that tried to help, you know, on that day. So we, Dave, myself, and lots of other people that we will never forget. And we will continue as an anniversary every year. We're not going to say, you're not getting so much things being done like we used to. But we will never forget. I will never forget. Dave will never forget, and so many of us. But once again, welcome everybody to the English Defence League Radio Show. And of course, the show's called tonight, English Defence League Radio Show, 9/11. The attack continues, sadly. With that, I'd like to say welcome to the English Defence League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Spider-Mitchell, and my wingman for this evening is Dave Agador-Milner. Tonight, we will be remembering the infamy, tragedy and heroism surrounding the 9/11 attacks. It has been 19 years since that fateful day, but as you will hear, the war on the non-Islamic world has continued. The campaign that the Muslim cult of death began in the 7th century is destroying lives and remaking civil societies in their hateful image, even to this day. Our news submarine, Jan Rennie, has brought articles for tonight's program that will bring all of this into razor-sharp focus. As with the 7/7 attacks, we will never forget the stern lessons of 9/11 and to the evil ideology that has inspired that attack. There will be no surrender ever. And all that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. Also go on to say, those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Of course, that was by the late great President John F. Kennedy. So without further ado, let me bring in my friend, my colleague, who's done a great job this evening with the opening of the show, and of course the great slides and the script for this evening. With that, over to you, Dave. Good evening, good afternoon, my dear friend.
Yes, good evening to you, Jeff, and good evening to everybody in the UK, and of course, hello to everyone around the world. It is always difficult when we come to this point in the year, as Jeff told you. As long, I believe, as the English Defence League radio show has existed, there has been a marking of this time of year to remember the sacrifices and the heroism and to honor the victims of the 9/11 attacks. And of course, that they did not just take place in New York. We're also talking about Flight 93 that went down near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and of course there was the Pentagon. So many acts of heroism that took place afterward, and this is only a two-hour show that we do here, so we couldn't cover them all. The problem, though, for people who want to show our respects each year is that we have to keep finding new things to talk about. Now, we will probably review a good many of the things that we've done over the years for the 20th anniversary of 9/11 next year. But this year, I decided, since I do a lot of the research, and Jeff does too, but I do a lot of the research, and decided to settle on something that people have been remembering this year. And it's something that we all knew about at the time, but there were so many acts of heroism, both on an individual level and from various first responders and people of that nature, and even businesses, everything, that it is rare that acts of heroism get lost in such an honorable shuffle, so to speak. And Jeff and listeners, I decided, and of course Jeff has approved this, he approves of everything, it has to go through Jeff, he's the boss. We decided on, this time, on the Manhattan boat lift, and a lot of people don't know what that is, but I found a good clip that will let everybody know what it is, and if you want to go looking for this, and Jeff, you may want to check the chat, but I'm going to let people know. If you want to go looking for this, go to YouTube and look for Boat Lift, The Untold Tale of 9/11 Resilience. Okay, that's what I'm going to play here. And I'll do that. Jeff, if you want to check the chat and see if anyone is there yet.
Yeah, I've just checked, Dave. No, continue, brother. It's a bit quiet at the moment. People might be shuffling through, but I'll check again in a minute. Back to you, Dave.
All right, brother. Thank you. Yeah. And we're going to go ahead and play this clip. Now, this is just one of, as I said, so many, just as with 7/7, so many acts of heroism that went on. But this one was something special. This was done on the 7th of September, 2011. And this was going to be just over 11 minutes long. So give this a listen. You guys are listening to the English Defense League radio show, 9/11 Remembrance.
I thought I was watching a movie, Towering Inferno at first. And then I looked real close, and I noticed it was the World Trade Center. I was compelled, because I'm a type of person that can't stand by and watch other people suffer. And to me, they were suffering. They wanted to get off the island. And there was no way for them to get off the island other than the water. And I had noticed when I was watching the television, I saw a lot of, you know, the ferries going up into the slips and taking people off. I said, fine, we could do the same thing. I could take people on my boat, get in there, take them where they have to go. And that's what we did.
On the morning of September 11th, when the towers came down, millions of people ran for safety. Hundreds of thousands of them ran south to the water's edge. That's when they realized that Manhattan is indeed an island, and that they were trapped.
They were feeling helpless, and that's the worst feeling in the world. What was a person on the ground going to do? Buildings were down. There were people laying under the rubble of the building. Firemen, civilians. My wife was there, and I turned around. I says, I've got to go do something. Just like that. And she looked at me. She says, what are you going to do, you maniac? I says, I'm going to take the Amberjack up into the city and help. She says, but what if they're attacked again? I says, well, then that's something I have to live with. I says, I have to do what I have to do. I says, and nobody can stop me right now. Even if I save one person or I rescue one person, that's one person less that will suffer and die.
They were trying to evacuate Manhattan because nobody knew what was going on. You know, you didn't know something else was going to happen. It was just a madness on one side and, you know, and wanting to help people on the other side.
They were just streaming out of the buildings, and the first mode of transportation they saw was a ferry boat. That's when they knew, this is how I'm getting out of here. They didn't even care where the boat was going.
There wasn't panic in New York in the beginning, just volume. It wasn't until the first building fell that there was panic.
You heard the building go down, but we're in the slip, so we can't see it. That's when we started letting go, and then all of a sudden, engulfed. You couldn't see anything.
People were actually jumping into the river and swimming out of Manhattan. Boats were very nearly running them over.
Wait. These people wanted out of Manhattan no matter any way they could.
Somebody wants you to go over there.
Every mode of transportation out of Manhattan was shut down. All the subways were shut. Tunnels were all closed. They closed the bridges. They closed everything immediately.
Boats, usually an afterthought in most New Yorkers' minds, were for the first time in over a century the only way in or out of Lower Manhattan. I'm evacuating
people. Anybody, get over here. The process actually had already started. There were some boats that were grabbing people. That people were lined up at the walls.
On the left.
It's just human nature. You see people in distress on the seawall in Manhattan begging you to pick them up. You have to pick them up.
They didn't know what was going on. They seen the building getting hit with these two planes. As far as they was concerned, you know, we were being bombed. I was wondering if they were going to come on the boat, if they were had people with bombs, or if they were going to come on. We're a big orange target in the middle of that harbor. My job is to keep the boat safe, my passengers safe, my crew safe.
Everybody was in shock, running around. They didn't want to leave their families. They had loved ones running around the city.
Nobody has a baby! Nobody has it!
There was one guy ran from the apron and jumped onto the boat. He grabbed onto the metal, climbed up right next to the pilot. So I'm going out there to say something. He slides down to the next deck. So the deckhands get him and go, "What? You know, what are you doing?" He goes, "I'm jumping for my life." So, you know, you couldn't argue with him there.
There was a small boat that was at the lower tip of Manhattan. I thought the boat was going to flip over because so many people were trying to get on. And as I looked behind, they were just 10 deep. And that's kind of what gave us the idea.
We decided that this has to get better organized and we better do it. And that's what we did.
So we decided to make the call on the radio. All available boats.
This is the United States Coast Guard aboard the pilot boat, New York. Anyone want to help with the evacuation of Lower Manhattan? Report to Governor's Island.
When that call came on the radio, they were coming.
I was uncertain of who was going to respond. About 15, 20 minutes later, there are just boats all across the horizon.
Literally 100 targets converging on the lower part of Manhattan.
When we came out of that dust cloud, tugboats, I'd never seen so many tugboats all at once.
There was just a fleet of tugboats headed to Manhattan.
If it floated and it could get there, it got there.
All different size, shapes, and forms. I mean, and they were zooming across this water.
Ferries, private boats, party boats.
I worked on the water for 28 years. I've never seen that many boats come together at one time that fast. One radio call, and it just came together just that fast.
Hundreds of boats converged on the city, leaving the sun-bathed harbor behind them. Dead ahead, the unknown.
That was something I won't forget. It was just low, dark, acrid, black smoke. It was like there was a big chimney in Manhattan. When we pulled into Pier 11, the dust was unbelievable.
And then out of nowhere, you just kept on seeing people coming.
They looked like zombies coming through the fog, and you knew that those were human beings.
Don't leave us. Please don't leave us here. Take us. At that point, the Coast Guard said, not how many people are you allowed, how many people can you fit?
Come on, guys, anybody coming? Get your ass over here now! Come on!
The boats started hanging, literally would take a bed sheet off a bunk and a can of spray paint and paint their destination on.
Some of these people never been in the water, never been on a boat before.
Housewives, workers that do windows. We had executives. And the thing that was the best, everyone helped everyone.
I want you to hold my hand, come on board. Get inside. One at a time. Get in inside.
I saw four businessmen lifting up an old woman with a seeing eye dog, a German Shepherd, and they lifted her up like a surfboard and passed her over the handrail.
When we would carry a load of people over, and there was somebody standing there that seen their husband or wife, you know, that made us feel even better, you know. Well, at least we got two back together, you know. Keep on going, you know.
The guy that works at the ferry, he's a welder. His son was on my boat. He actually came up. He thanked me.
We went back and forth all day long, carrying boatloads, as many as our boat would hold. And it was a lot of people. A lot of people.
You couldn't have planned nothing to happen that fast, that quick.
No training. This was just people doing what they had to do that day.
You forget all about what you're supposed to do, what to teach in school, and you say, you know what? Morally, this is the right way to go, and deep down, this is what I'm gonna do.
Average people, they stepped up. And when they needed to, they showed me, you know, when the American people need to come together and pull together, they will do it.
I do feel a way honored that I was a part of it.
It was the greatest thing I ever did with my life.
The greatest day that I've ever seen in all my boating, I mean, my life on the water.
The great boat lift of 9/11 became the largest sea evacuation in history. Larger than the evacuation of Dunkirk in World War II, where 339,000 British and French soldiers were rescued over the course of 9 days. On 9/11, nearly 500,000 civilians were rescued from Manhattan by boat. It took less than 9 hours.
I believe somebody has a little hero in them. You gotta look in. And it's in there. It'll come out. If need to be.
I have one theory in life. I never want to say the word I should have. If I do it and I fail, I tried. If I do it and I succeed, better for me. And I tell my children the same thing. Never go through life saying you should have. If you want to do something, you do it.
Wow.
Welcome back to the Ian Smith Sing Radio Show. Jeff.
Wow, that was amazing. Dave, as he was talking, he said about Dunkirk. I was automatically thinking of Dunkirk before he even said it. I was thinking this was definitely, well, it's bigger than Dunkirk. What the people that was moved on that day, so many hours, was exceeded Dunkirk. So the spirit of the American person, the heroism, shines on, and it always will do. We see what happened at Pearl Harbor. We see the heroism there. And then you see 9/11. The spirit of the people all shines through. When you know a human being is in trouble, what do? You run towards and try to help. And that is what we see with these great, massive armadas of little boats, tugboats, keep going back, because they knew it was the right thing to do. God bless them all and their families. For doing what they did, saved a lot of people. But everybody was pretty scared, you know. Even put in that situation, you don't know if there's going to be bombs falling or jets falling out of the sky. It's pretty terrifying, isn't it, Dave? That's the way I look at it. You got to sort of sit back and think of what people was going through and the fear, because it grips you, because no one knew exactly what was going to happen that day. There were so many things going on across the country, wasn't there? But like Pastor back to you, Dave.
Jeff. Well, the thing that got me, and it's a thing that everybody should remember, and most people don't now, because it's been 19 years, so they you know, have some have kind of blanked it from their minds, and others never even thought about it. But we didn't realize at first, just as I'm sure it was true with you guys over there, you know, on 7/7, we didn't know whether these attacks were, we'd already found out that they'd hit New York and that they'd hit Washington, D.C., and that they had hijacked a plane and it had crashed in Pennsylvania. So we didn't know at that point where the next attack was going to be, if it was going to be just attacks rippling all across the country. And even on a local level, you heard that one guy talking. He didn't know that there wasn't going to be a suicide bomber come on his boat and blow it up with a bunch of people. There was a lot of fear, but at the same time, there was a whole lot of dropping of every one of the things that, sadly, so many people are trying to use to separate us all now, in both my country and yours. There were things that just didn't matter anymore. Race didn't matter anymore. Economic status didn't matter anymore. What country you looked like you came from didn't matter anymore. And they never should matter. But at times like 9/11 and at times like 7/7, all right, is when you see, I really think you see the hand of God come in and people go, yeah, you know what? I don't care what he looks like over here. You know, this is my brother and he needs help, you know, or, you know, all right, well, she may be below my status, but that's my sister over there and, you know, it's on me to help her. Humanity at its best responding to humanity at its worst. You know what I mean, Jeff?
Yeah. I understand that, Dave. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like you were saying there, Dave, it was humanity responded in a way that we know it can and makes us all very proud of what people did that day. We see a lot of heroism. And sadly, a lot of people lost their lives doing acts of heroism. People leading people down the stairs, and unfortunately, they didn't make it, but they made sure a lot of their workers got away before the towers come down. And I can't remember the gentleman. He was a manager of one of the floors, Dave. He led them down, and unfortunately for him, he lost his life, but he did help so many people. That's what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen. We talk about it because it just reflects on the spirit of humanity. That was it. It doesn't matter who you are, what you come, what background. You see a brother or a sister in trouble. You know, you're a human being. And I think put in a situation, you want to help. If there's anything you can do, you're going to do it. And that's what I thought, you know, when we all sat back and looked at what had actually gone on, and then we hear the stories. There's still a lot of stories, ladies and gentlemen, there's still a lot of stories out there that hasn't been spoke about. I'm sure as time goes by, a lot of them stories will unfold still, even after all these years, ladies and gentlemen, because you know there's untold stories still to be told. I'd like to pass that back to you, Dave. Dave, your thoughts. Back to you, Dave.
Right, Jeff. Well, and you're right. I think there are a lot of these stories that will be told. And some people will wait years to tell them. But, you know, it will all come out. But some of it never will, because some of these people are you know, heroes in a such a true sense that they don't want to talk about their heroism. You know, it's very similar to a lot of war combat veterans. We would call them heroes, but they would just say, well, you know, I was there and I did my job and that's all. You know, because they're that humble and they're that plugged into their own humanity to where they don't need adulation and things like that. But sadly, and this is why the show is called The Attack Continues, sadly, even after 9/11, the attack did continue by Mohammedans on the non-Islamic world. And Jan Rennie, our news submarine, has provided three articles. Actually, she provided more than that, but there were these three that I thought were very relevant. And calling Jan our new submarine, because she has her things that she's doing, and yet she's still a part of the team. And once in a while, she pops up and really brings us great news stories because she is a fantastic news hound. So, you know, it's kind of like a submarine surfacing once in a while. All right, but she did bring us some really good things. And the first one, I'm going to go ahead and read, Jeff. If you want to check the chat, I'm going to get ready to read this one. Do we have anybody in chat?
Just checking now, Tony. Just seeing. It's very quiet tonight, believe it or not, buddy. It's very quiet in the chat room. So, yeah, we're okay. Go ahead, bro.
All right. Well, it does tend to be that way on Thursday a lot of times. So,
yeah.
There they are. Now, among the other things that the Mohammedans do when they get the opportunity, is to wipe out signs that anything other than Islam has occupied a certain area. We saw them do that a few years ago with one of the big temples in Palmyra, and they've done that in Afghanistan and just numerous other places. They even want to do that with the pyramids. And, you know, I've often said, Jeff, yeah, you know, good luck doing that. But they would love to do it because the pyramids are not Islamic, okay? But they do manage to do it when they get the opportunity. And one of those opportunities came to pass with a certain church. Now, this story, of course, again, all three of these are thanks to Jan Rennie. This story was published on the 3rd of this month. All right, and it is from it's from the Carousel Front Page Culture. Okay, the headline on it is I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly. Hagia Sophia of Bursa was demolished, and if you look in our slides at the page the English Fence League Radio Show page at blogtalkradio.com, you will see a picture of what so far there is left of that church. Now, I'm going to go ahead and read the subhead for this. Now, here's the subhead. Okay. The Saint Georgios Greek Orthodox Church, which was restored and transformed into a cultural center by the Nothur municipality in Bursa, was taken from the municipality and transferred to an Islamic foundation. And so now you can figure out for yourselves as I scroll down, guys, why it was demolished. All right, now I'm going to read some of this here. The historic building, which was neglected for 7 years, was destroyed last night, as reported by Gazette du Var, according to GreekCityTimes.com. The St. Georgios Greek Orthodox Church, known as the Hagia Sophia of Bursa, since it was used both as a church and a mosque in the past, was estimated to have been built in 1896. It was converted into a mosque after the exchange, but became abandoned because it was not used after the Yeni Oğuz Mosque was built. Right. The historical building, whose door was locked after passing to the foundation, was not maintained for years, and cracks began to appear in the building. Nothing the situation to the regional directorate of foundations and drawing attention to the danger of demolition. All right. Nalufer municipality attempted again in 2016 to control the church and demanded that the building be allowed to being allocated, excuse me, to the municipality for renovation. However, it was stated that the building cannot be used for any purpose other than a place of worship, and that this place was a mosque. So there you go, guys. That's the reason why that church was demolished right there. I'm going to see how, and we have one more little paragraph here. All right. Nilufer Municipality warned of demolition in 2019 and demanded that the building be rented to the municipality again. However, it was refused. The historical building, left unattended for 7 years, was demolished last night. And that's the end of that article. Jeff, your views?
Well, it breaks my heart when I hear that it's demolished, and then before you know it, a mosque appears. It's disgusting. It's blasphemy. I don't care what anybody says, it's not the thing. It needs to be. There'll be a time these mosques will come down. You know, there's a presence that is against these horrific things. They are cultists of death. The mosques are these, you know, the basically command and control structures. We all know it. People don't talk about it, but it is what it is. And one day, there'll be a wrath to pay on these horrific things, because it is a blasphemy. It's a blasphemy against everything that I stand for, what you stand for, what the human race stands for, ladies and gentlemen. That's the way I look at it, and there will be. And it's not in my hands, it's not in anybody's hands in this world. But there will be, they will pay the piper in the end for this total blasphemy, because that's what we've been seeing for a hell of a long time now, ladies and gentlemen. Dave, I'll pass it back to you. I don't know what you think about it. I just speak from my heart, Dave, you know, like I normally do.
Well, yeah, Jeff, and what gets me about it is that they weren't even, the Mohammedans weren't even using this for a mosque anymore. They had another one. And instead of letting the town go ahead and get the building back and use it for something else, it isn't even clear that they were going to turn it into a church again. They might have turned it into another community center. But no, when Mohammedans get hold of something, they don't want to give it up. Even if it falls into ruin, it's got to be part of their territory. And it just shows you the childish, almost toddler-like mindset, quite honestly, of the devout Mohammedan. You know, this is mine. You know, oh, you want it? No. You can't have it. This is mine. Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, I don't care if I'm not using it and it's you know, decaying to nothing. You know, you can't have it. And what a shame. And
what,
yes,
my right
what
hand
a, what
possessed,
a
what they say, Dave, what my right hand possessed, it's mine. It's not yours, it's mine. That's the mindset of the people.
And you know, it's just, again, it's just a waste of a building. And as you said, it was just a shame that it was turned over to the Mohammedans in the first place, because it's kind of symbolic, really, of what happens when Islam gets hold of something. This just decayed and died off. Now we're going to move on to the next article here. All right, and this
very good
one
article.
Here,
I just started today, Dave. That was a really interesting article. Got to thank Jan for finding that. So a big kudos to Al Jan. And thank you, Dave, for presenting that to the great listeners out there. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, no worries, Jeff. And we have now Jan found at the website of someone else, you know, Bonnie, who runs Bare Naked Islam. And
God bless her, yeah, Bonnie.
Yes, indeed. And this one here, unfortunately, this is another anniversary. I'm going to try to find a date on this article so that we can get this in for the listeners here. This is September, I believe, the 1st. September the... Okay, sorry, guys. I'm going to have to magnify this, so there'll be a slight delay while I do that. Yeah, September the 3rd of this year, okay. And this one, the headline on this one is... This is, by the way, you can find this in Bare Naked Islam. The headline on this one is, this week marks the 16th anniversary of the Muslim massacre and rape fest of children and teachers at a Beslan school in Russia. And I'm sure a lot of you guys remember this. There's a picture of the school.
We never forget it, Dave, ever. Never forget,
Yeah. Exactly. And it's a continuation, by the way, of what I was talking about. But I'm going to read the subhead. On September the 1st, 2004, a group of heavily armed Chechen Muslim terrorists stormed a school in Beslan, where they took some 1,200 hostages and forced them into the school gymnasium, which they had mined with explosives. And scroll down a bit and say, you guys can go to Bare Naked Islam and find this if you want to read it. Okay? And scroll up a bit past that. All right, here we go. On September the 1st, 2004, more than 1,100 parents and children arrived for the first day of school at school number one in Beslan. They were greeted by heavily armed Islamic separatist gunmen, Chechen Muslims, who held them hostage for 3 days. This is, I'll have some things to say about this once I'm done. In a bloody climax, more than 380 people were massacred and many more injured, including children, in a series of explosions and firefights, not to mention many rapes and sexual assaults of children and teachers by the Muslim terrorists. Once a sleepy town of around 35,000 in North Osetia, bordering Muslim Chechnya, where Russia has fought 2 years against Muslim separatists, Beslan has become synonymous with the massacre, and residents still live in fear. And I'm going to scroll down a bit, guys, to read a bit more of this. All right, let me just see if I can get that there. Okay, yeah. All right. The crisis began when armed Islamic separatist militants, mostly Chechen Muslim, occupied school number one, SNO, at the town of Beslan, North Osetia, an autonomous republic in the North Caucasus region of the Russian Federation. The hostage takers were Rivadu Selekin Battalion, sent by the Chechen Muslim separatist warlord Shamil Basavei, who demanded recognition of the independence of Chechnya at the UN and Russian withdrawal from Chechnya. On the third day of the standoff, Russian security forces entered the building with the use of tanks, incendiary rockets, and other heavy weapons. Okay. At least 330 hostages were killed, including 185 children, with a significant number of people injured and reportedly missing. So this was a very heavy counterattack that occurred with this. And I'm scrolling down to see if there's any more. Guys, if you look at this article at Bare Naked Islam, number one, this is not kid-friendly. Okay, so my advice is do not look at this with your children or your grandchildren. This is very raw, very much an adult thing to look at. You really do want to keep this away from the children, but it shows.
I second that, Dave. I know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well said, Dave. Ladies and gentlemen,
that is
what Dave said. Please look at it. Not with children. It will break your heart because these are a lot of children. There was a lot of teachers, and it was like a scene from hell. Dave, I think we know that what we're talking about here, don't we? We've seen these pictures before, and it's heartbreaking, ladies and gentlemen. It's what can you say? It tears your soul apart, doesn't it, Dave, when you see horrific things like these? The inhumanity of these people to kids. And how many times have we said this over the years, Dave, eh? How many times have we said that? You know, sorry, Dave, I think I just had to comment on it, mate, you know. Back to you, Dave.
Well, I was done with the article anyway, Jeff. I just had to make sure there was none of it left, and I was just scrolling past the pictures, and I saw them. And but you may want to call back in. It's past your time, and in the meantime, I'll comment on this article myself.
I was well out of it. I was engrossed with what you're saying. Yeah, back to you, Dave. Cheers, pal.
All right, Jeff. Okay. Now, guys, Jeff's going to call back in, but I will comment on this article, and it shows sadly, typically, what happens when Mohammedans take hostages in any situation. And while the Russian government was criticized for storming in and doing what they had to do, they had to do it. Sean Lewis is one of the heads of SHR Media, which is one of the networks that hosts the Unpleasant Blindgot, my show. This program, parts of it, appear at Spreaker.com at the Unpleasant Blindgot page under the auspices of SHR Media. Now, I have a ton of respect for Sean Lewis. I really do. But he and I disagree on this one point. I have said for several years now that if a situation occurs where Mohammedans take hostages, the police and security forces really have no other choice than to immediately go in and neutralize the situation. And yes, I know terrible things can happen, but guys, over the years that I've been with the English Defense League radio show, I have never heard of a single incident when Mohammedans have taken hostages where those hostages have not been tortured, raped, just had terrible, horrible things done to them, and of course killed. And this is what leads me to disagree, respectfully, but to disagree with Sean and with anyone else who thinks that these people want to negotiate. Mohammedans do not want to negotiate on anything. They want what they want, and if they don't get what they want, they are quite happy to kill, maim, and just tear people's lives apart. And this is just one more example of it. As the article said, okay, the attack continued. I mean, in a sense, I know Jeff is a father, grandfather, great-grandfather. I mean, I know, Jeff, you can put yourself in the place of the parents that weren't there at the school at the time and worrying about their children. you know, back in 2004, am I right? Jeff, I do believe you're back with us. Just wanted to make sure that I can hear you. So you've got your microphone. Yep, you should. Your mic is open, Jeff, so we should be hearing you. Okay, Jeff, I'm not hearing you. I don't know what's going on, but I'm not able to hear you if you're talking, okay? What I'm going to do...
apologies, Dave. I've had problems getting back in, and just as I'll come back, I had to take a quick break. Bear with me. I need to get my breath back, mate. Back to you, Dave.
Oh, quite all right, Jeff, quite all right. And, when Jeff does rejoin us, I'm going to want him to comment on this because in the space of that 3 days, it had to have been a nightmare for the parents of these children and the grandparents of these children. Just imagine what was going on inside that school. And, of course, like I said, guys, if you look at this article at Bare Naked Islam, if you look at this article at Bare Naked Islam, you will see pictures of what was going on. And, of course, these people also knew because they lived very close to a large Muslim enclave. The people in this town knew of the possibility of what could happen. All right. They, I'm sure, were not totally unfamiliar with the horrors that these people could inflict on these children and teachers in this school. So having to live through that and especially the end of it had to have been hell on earth. Jeff, are you ready to comment?
I've recovered now, Dave. I just needed to just recover. I had to step out of the room just for a second. So when I got back, I tried to hurry back, but I just had to get my breath. There's things I'd like to say about what happened. Yes, this event unfolded in 3 days. I think most of us see it, and we knew that there wouldn't be a happy conclusion, that there's going to be no victory, whatever, in the end, that young children is going to pay a heavy toll. And this is what we was all praying against, that this wouldn't happen. But unfortunately, we do live in the real world, and these people do not care how they inflict pain and suffering. And the more suffering they can inflict and hurt people concerned with their children, in their eyes, these cultists' eyes, the better. You know, it's disgusting to say that, but that is exactly the way they feel, ladies and gentlemen. They've got no time for the human race, you know, apart from their cult of death. And that's it. I can't call it anything other than that. And what we see and what we witnessed, you know, over the time, over years, it's no different. These people are totally inhuman. I can't say, what can you say? People that would cause death and destruction of little children. There is no peace in, or there's no... nothing in this civilization that we would, you know, accept their views of any sort. They are totally without feeling. Apathy in the highest class. They just do not care. And it's sad. But something I've got to say, Dave, that these Chechens, Islamics, paid a very high price after. It went black, we didn't hear much, but I'll tell you what, it was totally all-out war, and put it this way, they paid a heavy toll, because we know that, because different things have come out, areas were totally wiped out, totally. So, Dave, I'd like to pass it back to you, because it still makes me very sad, and it's very tragic to talk about the events of these so-called people. How can we call them people, Dave? To do these crimes against humanity is just beyond me, mate. Back to you, Dave.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, we may not agree with a lot of what Mr. Putin does. Certainly I don't. And he's not exactly what we would call a friend of the West. He's very much an old Soviet. Right? That said, he was not prepared to put up with this attack. And yes, the Chechen rebels have definitely paid a heavy toll. The Russian government has punished them as only the Russians can. When the Russians do decide to go on punishment detail, they do it with flair. That's for sure. And in this case, it was deserved, particularly for the leaders, the people who planned this horror. All right. I don't know, quite honestly, I don't know how the leader of these Chechen rebels thought that they would get away with this. They had to know who they were dealing with. Even I would, well, first of all, I'd never plan anything that terrible anyway. But knowing the mindset of Vladimir Putin, knowing the mindset of the Russian people, there's just no way that anyone with any sense would plan something like that and expect there to be a positive outcome. And as you said, Jeff, the outcome definitely was not positive. And sadly, it's just of a piece with what we see that goes on, Jeff. Every Ramadan, we always do the Ramadan countdown, or count up, rather, of those killed and injured during Ramadan, because the attack continues. All right. And this, it even comes down to the personal level. This is the last one that Jan sent us. And it's a story that I found difficult to read. I'll be honest with you. And it's not just because I suck at reading stories. It's because it comes down to the personal level. And sadly, this is something that happens on a daily basis. And by the way, all the stories that Jan posts are always confirmed by her, okay? There are very few people that I trust immediately when it comes to being a news source. She is one of them, because she will run a story down and reflect it through various news agencies and things of that nature, okay?
Reliable source that Jan is, and always has been, Dave. I'm sorry, I just need to say that, because Jan has always been that reliable source that we go to, isn't it? Or who comes to us, actually, the stories.
Right, yes, she has. Now, this one here was published on September the 2nd. Right? And it comes, by the way, guys, from techdeeps.com. Okay. And you can look for it and get the headline here. Pig bastard. Boy carried a cross, beaten down by gangs. Okay? Story here for you. All right. And here we go. The boy was in Varvsparken in Malmo and played football at lunchtime on Monday. An unknown number of boys, that's how they put it here in quotes, approached him and asked why the boy was carrying a cross. According to Skanska Dagbladet, right? It's a tough name to read, but I got it, I think. The gang wanted to know if the cross, quote, was due to his religion, end quote. And when he answered yes, he was asked if he, quote, ate pig, end quote, and was called, quote, pig bastard. The gang then knocked over the 11-year-old, who injured his arm, when he managed to run home. They took his football and shoes. All right. On Tuesday, the police had not yet arrested any perpetrator. Hate crime motives are suspected, writes Skanska Dagbladet. Okay? And that it's just a very short story. But guys, Jeff will tell you that this sort of thing happens every day. Am I right, Jeff?
You certainly are, Dave. We've often talked about these stories, which, you know, we find that they come out and then they're trying to cover the tracks of the stories. We see it time after time. And if you talk about it, before you know it, you've got a writ against you. You see that with Tommy Robinson, with that young lad who was at school, and basically he had to be moved. He had to move out because of the absolutely horrific things that was going on to the families. And so Tommy ended up, there was a law writ, this Islamic lawyer decided to take the case on and try to sue Tommy over it with some of the things he said. But it was factual. Everything that Tommy said was factual. That happened. So I'm not sure if it's still an ongoing thing, but we hear about these stories, ladies and gentlemen, day in, day out, and they do try to cover the tracks of what's going on. But we all know what's going on. They think we're stupid, and we're not. But, Dave, your thoughts, bro?
Well, Jeff, it keeps coming back. Okay, guys, if you're wondering who this gang was composed of, all right, all you have to do is listen to this audio, which we've saved. We play this once in a while. This took place on the 5th of March in 2017. There was a fender bender, a minor car accident, and this is what took place between a Muslim and a non-Muslim in the UK. So, guys, give this a listen.
Yeah? How've you got?
I fucking live in this country, you prick.
Yeah, me too.
Fucking knobhead. Best one in Pudima,
yeah,
they
are.
Yeah. Yeah, called by your mum, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
You're not allowed.
Yeah?
You're not allowed.
I'll fucking move your fucking phone out of my face before I smack it one. You son of a bitch.
Yeah.
You are a son of a bitch.
You are. Look at you. You eat pork and you fucking look like pork.
Yeah.
You fucking pig. You fucking pussy.
Yeah. This is racist.
Yeah. How's that
racist? Racist.
I call you a pork bastard. I call you a white bastard.
Race or religion.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. Pull the fence, Lisa, then.
I want to
see what this motherfucker's
going to
do. Yeah. Your mum's a gangster, you son of a bitch. Fuck off. Yeah, fuck you. Fucking stupid bitch. Is that your country?
You don't even try.
You fucking swoop.
You don't even try
to
do that.
Leave your fucking shit and move it then.
Well, there you go, guys. That is the kind of privilege that these Mohammedans believe that they have now in our countries. That happened in the UK. That could just as easily have been the United States of America. In fact, similar things are happening in the United States of America right now with all these riots. Okay. But yeah, you heard that. You heard that Muslim talking about pork this, pig that. So you know who this gang was
totally
composed of.
Racist comments was every step of the way he was saying was racist. If we were to say something like that, Dave, any of us, we'd be pulled in and probably spend a bit of time in prison, wouldn't we? It's quite obvious that the standards are different for where they're concerned, unfortunately. But I'm sorry, Dave, I need to say that. Back to you, bro.
Well, Jeff, yeah, I mean, one set of standards for them, one set of standards for us when it comes to Muslims versus non-Muslims. And they use that now so that they can attack and then hide behind the set of double standards. I can almost guarantee that tomorrow when some of these quote-unquote news organizations like CNN and some of these other things say anything at all about 9/11, they'll excuse it and talk about how white supremacists are a bigger danger than Mohammedans and all this sort of thing. I'm not seeing white supremacists out there taking over schools and taking hostages and raping people and murdering people and things of that nature like Islamists do every year. I'm not seeing white supremacists out there, well, except for there's one exception that I can think of, and I'm not even positive about that one, running people down with vehicles or shooting people or things of that nature. It's just not happening, but I can guarantee that the fake stream media over here tomorrow will be denying that the 9/11 attacks had anything to do with Islam, or they'll claim, Jeff, this the moldy oldie claim, which, you know, we heard, I think Bobo said it himself. Oh, it's just a distortion of Islam. It's not the real Islam. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's what we would normally call, trying to spin the can over, something like that. It's just, we know that is a total lie. Anybody who says that is lying, and they're appeasing the cultists of death. That's what Boris Johnson, I don't care who it is who says it, they're appeasing a terrible cult out there that wants death and destruction of the human race. Time people stood up against this, because politicians will keep spinning it out because they're making serious money. I don't care who they are, Boris Johnson, whoever, they're all making serious money to say the opposite of what's really happening. Typical politicians' views, Dave. I need to say that because it pisses me off with these politicians, though, big time. Back to you, Bob.
Right, and I'm going to go ahead. I know that we played this, at least once this year, okay? But I think that it is always useful to remind people, all right, of just what's going on with Islam as far as all this stuff goes, because I can guarantee tomorrow you'll hear the usual chorus of people saying that it's nothing to do with Islam. All right, and I'm going to play one, Jeff. This is one that you're familiar with, a conservative bite that I made in 2016, all right, on the 23rd of January, okay? And for those out there who might even be listening to this program and thinking that that this is just a small minority of Mohammedans, all right, I offer a different view here, okay? So, Jeff, if you want to check the chat room one more time just to see if someone's come in. And Jeff's
going on it now. No, it's really quiet tonight, Dave. It's unusual because you normally see a couple of people, don't we? Back to you, Dave.
All right, well, yeah, but it is a Thursday. We'll see more people on Sunday,
yeah.
I'm sure. All right, well, guys, I'm going to go ahead and play this, because and just remember this with the memory of 9/11 in the background, okay? You're listening to the English Defense League radio show, and this is what I did in 2016.
Time for an unpleasant blind guy, conservative bite. Each time civilized people are attacked by the followers of Muhammad, politicians, pundits, and others rush to the news outlets to tell us all that it's not all Muslims. That the support among the followers of Islam for terrorism only amounts to about 10% of those who practice the ideology of Islam. This claim is always made, and it's worth checking. A good way to do that would be to compare the reaction of Mohammedans to the November 2015 jihadi attacks in Paris and their reaction to the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. After the Paris attacks, six Muslim students at a technical institute in Varese, Italy, walked out of their classroom during the minute of silence the school held in homage to those who died in the Paris attacks. Many might dismiss this as a very small number. But in France, where the attacks took place,
Some French newspapers reported that on Thursday, the minute of silence that was called by the president in a day of national mourning, teachers reported to the press that some of their Muslim students refused to accept or refused to observe that moment of silence. Therefore, there is still a big problem in society, by no means the majority.
But is it only a small minority? In Chechnya, 800,000 Muslims protested the Muhammad cartoons, with similar events held in Iran and elsewhere. In Pakistan alone, the number reached 10,000 protesting the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. In Australia, 1,000 Muslims rallied against the Charlie Hebdo cartoons. In Kyrgyzstan, 1,000 Muslims rallied, saying, "I am not Charlie, I love my prophet." Now let's contrast those numbers. In 2005, a group called the Free Muslims Coalition held a Free Muslims March Against Terror that drew about 25 people. In July of 2015, a rally in Ireland against the Islamic State got about 50 people. In June of 2013, at a progressive Muslim rally in Toronto, only about 25 people showed up. Now you may be saying, "Well, Dave, these are countries where followers of Muhammad who want to protest acts of terror might be afraid for their safety in their communities." All right, let's try a country where people do have gun rights. In August of 2013, there were only about 25 people at a rally against misperceptions that Islam was violent. That was held in Boston. Some still might be saying, "Well, that was a city in the northeastern United States. We know they're kind of strict on gun rights." Okay. In October 2014, a Houston, Texas rally against the Islamic State got 10 people. People, it's accepted wisdom that actions speak louder than words. In France, which has a population of about 5 million Muslims, only about 30 attended the rally against the Paris jihad attacks. If it is only about 10% of the followers of Islam who support terror, why will not the other 90% even show up for rallies against Islamic terror? If, as the Council on American Islamic Relations says, these attacks are a distortion of Islam, then that means that they are an insult to Islam. That means that they are an insult to the Prophet Muhammad. So why are our streets not clogged with Muslim protesters demanding action from their governments to help free their countries from terror? Knowing the numbers, we can only come to one conclusion. It is because instead of only about 10% of Islamists supporting terror, only about 10% or less oppose terror. If this were not the case, the numbers at the anti-terror rallies would be massive. People, the cause of Islamic terror is not the fact that other countries are in the Middle East drilling oil they were invited in. It's not the fact that Muslims feel marginalized in civilized countries. It's because Islam inspires. The numbers show it. The actions of the followers of Muhammad prove it. People, while there is still time to save civilization, we must act in a non-violent way to remove the followers of Islam from all positions where they could do non-Muslims harm. They must assimilate to their host countries, or they must find somewhere else to live. Like all true Americans, I have a natural revulsion towards singling out a group of people for different treatment. But as the numbers show, most Islamists support singling out everyone else for different treatment, and that treatment is not good. Civilization can save itself if we will just act. This has been an unpleasant blind guy, Conservative Bite.
Well, now, Dave, I've got to comment and say, wow, is that relevant today as it was 4 years ago? Absolutely. My goodness me, what's changed? Things have deteriorated. What you were saying, Dave, unfortunately, it's slipping by. We are still seeing apathy towards it. People are still pushing their head in the sand and taking their noses. sadly, until people wake up and realise that this is a threat to you and your family, unfortunately, we're going to see the decline of civilization if no one's doing anything. Like you said, Dave, do we want to see that? I know I don't, and nor do you, Dave. But Dave, once again, well done. That was a great. It seems like you've done it yesterday, mate. That's the clarity of it all is right there. Once again, kudos to you, Dave, for that. Brilliant. Back to you, bro.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it, man. And you, that is because you will be hearing a lot of this. It's nothing to do with Islam tomorrow. But we wanted to do this show today to show that 9/11 was not a one-off. 7/7 was not a one-off. These attacks have continued, be it tearing down non-Islamic buildings or be it massive hostage taking and brutalizing of those hostages, or be it just attacks on the personal level of non-Muslims by Muslims. It's still continuing, and I just told you in that bite what the solution is. And folks, we've agreed that we will end the show tonight with a special tribute song for the victims of 9/11, some of whom are still suffering today. Right, and I will go ahead and do this song to play out, and then, of course, Jeff will give us his normal sign-off. I just want to say to everyone before I do this, hug your loved ones. Understand that life is transient. Be there for them when they need you. And thank God for what you've got. Everyone be prosperous. Be vigilant. Be blessed. No surrender ever. And always remember.
Spend all your time waiting for that second chance. And it's hard at the end of the day. I need some distraction. Keep on building life.
I think that's the only tune that we, myself and Dave, will play for this evening, because we always will remember those that had lost their lives on that fateful day. So, of course, we will continue to do what we always do year in, because, you know, every one of the people that died, you know, I mean, you know, was a soul that was taken, you know, grasped away from, you know, what they were doing in their lives. And we can never forget that. And we cannot forget those responsible for the harm and the devastation that they created. We didn't have, none of us asked for this, none of us. But when you've got evil attack you, you have got no choice. Ladies and gentlemen, what do? You just step back? No, you've got to go and defend what you believe in. And this is what so many of our military have done in the past. So my thoughts and prayers go out to our military out there who fight against these evil out there. God bless you and your families. May you continue to do as you do. And our hearts and our souls are with you with your battle. God bless you. Dave, that's all I want to say. What a show this evening. And it just brings it all back to reality. This floods back from that day, doesn't it? But Dave, I'd like to pass it to you, because I said we've got a few minutes left, and I know you want to say a few things before we go. So back to you, bruv, for your final thoughts for this evening.
Well, Jeff, out of respect, I won't do my usual promo stuff, but just say that we will have a full slate of stuff for Sunday. And I think it's something that you guys need to hear about, because it's not just the Mohammedans that are attacking civil society. It's people on the left that want to gain total control regardless of human life. And we also cover some of that on this program. So stay tuned. And for everyone, just never forget. Back to you, Jeff.
Thank you, Dave. And yeah, that's just because we won't play out what we normally done that. That's important. We just played out with that tune. I'd like to thank everybody that may be listening on different devices. And we'll be back Sunday. We got a story that Dave was sharing with me earlier. I will be talking about that this Sunday. Tonight's show was really important, because me and Dave like to give it everything that we've got. And I think, Dave, once again, thank you so much for the little snippets and the little things that we've done for this evening. It's just brings it back to our listeners out there of our way that we still look at these things that still continue today. So with that, for myself and Dave, I'm counting down the time. I've got about 13 seconds. So good. Thank you, guys, for listening to the English radio show. As you scout me down, I've got about 6 seconds, 5 seconds. So we will see you this Sunday. So you take care. Stay safe. God bless you all. See you Sunday. Bye-bye.